Ranger Shauna Dempsey.
And I'm lesbian ranger Lori Milan. We represent one of the world's special elite forces, Lesbian National Parks and Services.
You're listening today to UMFM. We'd like to remind you, please be careful not to step on the lesbians.
Before we begin, please note that this podcast discusses mental health topics which can be sensitive for some listeners. Our intention is to provide information and resources to support mental well-being, not to cause harm or distress. Some episodes may include discussions around sensitive subjects, including mental health challenges, sexual well-being, and related topics. If you or someone you know is in crisis, please reach out for support. You can contact the Clinic Crisis Line at 204-786-8686, available 24/7, or call the 988 Suicide Crisis Helpline anytime for confidential support. For students, the Student Counseling Center on campus provides free and confidential counseling services. Check with the institution for more details on accessing these resources. Take care of yourself and remember, you are not alone. Help is always available. Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to the Active Minds podcast here on UMFM 101.5. I'm your host for the day, Neha. So before we begin today's episode, I would like to share that today's episode discusses topics related to sexual assault and support services. So listeners' discretion is advised and we encourage you to take care of yourself while listening. So moving on to our today's episode titled as Finding Support or Finding Strength is a part of Sexual Assault Awareness Month. It's a conversation focused on awareness, support and the resources available to those who may need them. And it's also a meaningful one for us as this is our final episode for the term and we wanted to end with a conversation that truly matters to our community. And for today's episode, I'm really grateful to be joined by our two guests from Clinic's, especially Hummingbird program, Ashley and Claire. So thank you so much, both of you, for being here today. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Awesome. How are you guys doing?
Not too bad.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Okay, so to start, I would love for our listeners to get to know both of you. So maybe anyone can start with your introduction and maybe your role at Clinic.
Yeah, sure. So my name is Claire, and my role at Clinic is a counselor advocate. And so what that means is that I can support people in medical systems and in our justice systems, sitting in two exams, also talking about sexual assault trauma, and really just sitting with people in moments of their crisis with whatever that looks like for them.
Awesome.
And I'm Ashley Stewart, and my role is I'm a coordinator of the medical side of Hummingbird, and I'm also a nurse. And the medical side of Hummingbird has forensic nurses, which basically are just nurses that have additional training and education to help people who might be impacted by violence. So we might talk to people about, you know, their options on if they want their body checked, if they're concerned they have an injury, if they want testing for infections or medications, and just walk them through some of those options.
Awesome. Thank you again, Ashley and Claire. And again, welcome to the show. So since we know that you both are from clinic and also from Hummingbird program, so just to give the context to our listeners, could you walk us through what the Hummingbird program is and what kind of support it has been providing or it provides?
Sure. Maybe I'll just talk about the advocacy side and then we'll switch off here. So advocacy can look like I said, being in medical and judicial systems. So we can help you make that phone call to the police to get systems if you want to do that. And we're also here to sit with you if you don't want to make any sort of reporting at all. We talk to you about what kind of reporting options there are, such as like third-party reporting, not reporting, that kind of stuff. And we also sit with you to make a choice if you want to do any sort of medical reporting. That doesn't mean you can't bring a support with you. Of course, you can bring a family member or a friend, anything like that, mm-hmm. Or another person for you that can sit with you. And yeah, we talk about, like I said, that sexual assault trauma piece and a lot of resources too, and talking about what you can do in Winnipeg to get that support.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that. Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, I'll talk about the other parts of the program. So Hummingbird is a newer part of clinic. So the advocates and the crisis lines, we've had there for many years. And Hummingbird is a community-based, gender-based violence program where we also brought with it the medical part of it. So we try to provide as much wraparound care in addition to the advocates as we can. So alongside Claire and her team, we have the forensic nurses, which are just mm-hmm. specialized nurses that can help give you whatever medical care you might want. So we will see anyone who's experienced any type of sexual assault or sexual violence, or any type of intimate partner violence, domestic violence, dating violence, regardless of when it happened. So if someone was impacted by something, you know, a day ago, a year ago, we're here to, you know, provide some of those supports. So someone might want some medical care and testing. They might be concerned about pregnancy or infections, or maybe they're considering reporting to law enforcement either now or down the road, mm-hmm. and they might want that nurse to collect what we call forensic evidence. And so the program can provide that as well. And then the other supports that we have at Hummingbird are a system navigator, mm-hmm. who is a social worker that can just help people navigate the complicated systems, whether that be, you know, support or housing or income. Mm-hmm. And then we have counseling in our crisis lines as well.
Awesome. I'm sure, like, in the morning today before I come to the station, I went to the website and I could see all the services that you just mentioned there. Awesome. Thank you both for sharing that. Now, moving on to our episode today, finding support and finding strength. Let's move from the beginning of awareness and understanding. For any topic, we believe that we should start with awareness and understanding. And as we know that April is recognized as Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and conversations like this today are really important. So I'd like to put my first question out here. Why is it especially important to raise awareness about this issue, like sexual assault, and within the student communities mainly?
I think it's really important to talk about sexual violence and particularly highlight this during Sexual Assault Awareness Month, because we still have a lot of myths and rape culture within our society. Mm-hmm. So part of what we like to do is to just start that conversation, to talk about sexual violence. What does that look like? I think sometimes we have a perspective that sexual violence just looks or occurs one way. And so folks might question, or maybe, you know, think their experience wasn't sexual assault, or maybe it wasn't severe enough because we have all these myths around what we think that should look like. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of, I think, misconceptions around who is impacted by sexual violence as well. And so during this month, we like to raise that awareness and talk about those types of things and just get that conversation started so that people, A, know where they can get help if they need it, and that we can start to have those conversations amongst our peers, our community, and educate each other as well about what violence looks like, and make sure that, you know, we're not, no one's participating in that, and do some of that prevention work.
Yeah, truly, do you want to add anything, Claire?
Yeah, I was just going to share the clinic's definition of sexual assault, because I think it's important to hear that, just so that people know, when there's a lot of stigma attached to what sexual assault, like Ashley was saying, looks like. So at clinic, we talk about sexual assault as any act of sexual contact on one person by another without mutual consent or with the ability to give consent to the individual.
Awesome. Again, thank you for sharing that as well, Claire. And since Ashley just put that out, that there are also misconceptions surrounding sexual assault and intimate partner violence, or IPV. So I'd like to just put another question out there. What are some common misunderstandings that we might see often in the surrounding, or that we might encounter?
Yeah, so some of the ones that that come up frequently are most sexual assaults are perpetrated by a stranger. And we know that 87% of people who have been reported, who have reported sexual assault, were assaulted by someone who they knew and trusted. Another one is that if you didn't fight back, it couldn't have been that bad. Many survivors experience tonic immobility or a freeze response during an assault where they're physically not able to move or speak. And these are common. People make up stories about sexual assault to get attention. And we know a fact about that is only 1 in 19 reports reported to police in the individual being taken into custody. Only 1 in 19 reports to police result in an individual being taken into custody. Reporting sexual assault is a very difficult thing to do, as many face scrutiny by police, by courts, and often their loved ones. And majority of sexual assaults are not reported to police out of fear that they'll be not believed. Only 2 to 4% of sexual assaults are false, similar to any other sorts of crime, whether that's physical assault or anything else. We also know, I can keep going if you like.
Yeah, no problem.
Sexual assault isn't that common. Sexual assault has been increasingly steadily increasing over the past 10 years, with 1 in 4 women experiencing sexual assault at some point in their lifetime. Being a part of a marginalized group makes you more vulnerable to experiencing sexual assault. Person of color, mental or physical disability, gender diverse, individual, women, all these groups. Men can't be victims of sexual assault. That's another false misconception. Although 97% of sexual assaults are perpetrated by men, 11 of those who experience sexual assault are men and boys as well.
And then on the medical side, I think some of the misconceptions that we hear from people are that maybe they think an exam has to take, a really long period of time. And we want people to know that an exam can take as little or as much time as they want. And when someone comes in, they really get to choose what their care looks like. Or sometimes people are fearful and say, I don't know, I don't want to have a pelvic exam. And so we want people to know that they don't have to have one. So when someone comes in, whether it's accessing Claire's team or the medical side, they really get to choose what their care looks like. And sometimes that means choosing different parts of an assessment or exam that they want and they don't want.
And they can always change their mind. When there's no judgment on if someone says, I don't think this is good for me right now, maybe I'll come back another time.
Awesome. That's great, actually. And I just wanted to point out what Claire mentioned about the data and the misconceptions. I think I really agree on the point when you said, like, it's very difficult and hard to come out and even to go out and ask for support, right? So I think my another question would be something related to that. Like, when it comes to accessing support by the individuals or by any kind of people, maybe students or any other individuals, what could be some of the barriers that they might face when reaching out to people?
Yeah, I think the stigma is just huge, right? So people might have an idea of, okay, maybe judgment comes up for people and say maybe it's what you wore, maybe it's where you were, how you were acting in these kinds of ways. We know that sexual assault is never the person who was assaulted. It's never their fault. It's always the perpetrator who made the choice to assault somebody. So that's one of the biggest things when people, I guess, have that fear of sharing and talking to peers.
And then I think maybe some of the other barriers we see are maybe some of those day-to-day things that we can assist with, right? So people are like, well, I don't know where to get support, right? And, you know, by accessing Hummingbird or a crisis line, we can help you navigate that. Or someone can't get transportation down, we can help with that. You know, if folks don't have insurance, so for example, if someone is here as an international student, we will see folks regardless of if they have identification, if they have insurance, those types of other barriers. You know, we're really happy to help work with folks.
Mm-hmm. Thank you both of you for sharing that. And I was just curious right just now that I got a question that is there any, since because you both of you have been involved in the services, right, supporting individuals, supporting people, is there any such data that the people of this kind of, maybe let's say people of this age group, has been more victimized? Is there any kind of data for that? If not, also fine.
Yes, there is. A lot of the research indicates that some of the highest rates of violence, including sexual assault and dating violence, happens in that population and that age range from around 15 to 24 is some of the highest rates. And mm-hmm. then after that, we see second highest rates as well. And I think folks who, you know, are in that age range, you know, might feel some of those stigmas that Claire talked about and be really apprehensive to come forward and to talk to someone and ask.
Thank you for sharing that. Do you want to share anything if you have?
Oh, I think that's great.
Okay, awesome. So now we have talked about the awareness and understanding of our topic and the more about this month. And all the points that both of you have shared, I think, helps build a clear understanding of this thing. So moving on to our support and services, since we already know about the stigma, misconceptions, and people feeling not very ready to reach out to people, maybe reach out to the services, and because of different reasons, as you shared. So could you also walk us through about more the types of support that Hummingbird program provides, and maybe clinic, if there is any?
Sure. So, I mean, the advocates, we, you know, do a lot of supporting with, you know, validating and believing people and empathizing, and all of that is things that I think you were kind of alluding to as well, that yeah. students can do yeah. and that, you know, support of people who are affected by sexual violence can do as well, in order to be there for someone. Clinic specifically, like I said, we can help with judicial systems, so we can make that phone call to police. We can help someone filling out a protection order. We can go with them to courts and do protection orders with somebody. We can also make conversation while they're doing an exam. I know I find that's very helpful for people, of course, because it can be traumatizing to go through an exam. And although we have a lot of trained nurses and kindness in the room, from my perspective, of course, everyone's is different. But, you know, just having conversation and talking about what TV show you like is sometimes very helpful. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to focus on the exam. And then, like Ashley had mentioned, we have counseling as well, the long-term counseling that you can sign up for. We do have a bit of a wait on that, but signing up for that is helpful so that you can, you know, start seeing someone and seeing someone for a longer time. Oftentimes, we recommend having, you know, a therapist on the side, so you can also come to our drop-in counseling. You can also call the sexual assault crisis line or call the crisis line. You can do all of these things kind of in conjunction while you're waiting for the counseling. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, we have the nursing team and we have the systems navigator.
And maybe some of the other services at clinic I can talk about if people are wondering as well. So you mentioned earlier, before the episode started, about our crisis line and our 988. We also have a teen clinic that they'll see folks usually up to age 21. We also have an STI, or sexually transmitted infection, walk-in clinic. Mm-hmm. We have a trans health clinic and program. We have drop-in counseling, like Claire stated. So if students ever wanting to just access drop-in counseling, it's just that. They can come in and get that. And then we have the UPVOL program that supports people who are being impacted by intimate partner or dating violence, and also people who might use violence in their relationship and are wanting to heal from that.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Since you already mentioned about the services that people can access, that the victim or any people, any individuals can access at Hummingbird program or clinic. So let's say for someone who may be considering reaching out, what does the typical process look like? I think, Claire mentioned some of it about it, but if you can expand.
Yeah, so there's a couple of different ways to reach out. So, I mean, certainly you can contact the Sexual Assault Crisis Line. I can give the number now, but it's 204-786-8681. And you can ask, if you forget any of these things that we're telling you right now, you can ask, how do I access Hummingbird? Yeah. We can help you with that. You can also call our coordinator, and that number is 204-784-4049.
Awesome.
And we also have our nursing coordinator that you can call, and that's number Ashley can give you.
Yeah, so the coordinator number is 784-4085. Or somebody might just want to call our nursing line or text that phone to ask a question. You don't have to even give your name. And their number is 204-451-9445. And as Claire mentioned, that's one way of reaching out. You can give us a call. Or sometimes folks just want to walk in. They walk in our front door and say, I'm here to see Hummingbird. And either a nurse or advocate will meet with you and just see what your needs are and connect you with whatever you might need in the program, or you can call and make an appointment. So those are the three main ways. Call our crisis line or our nurses, make an appointment, or just walk in.
Exactly. And I just wanted to point out that I found these things in website, and you guys are so awesome that you guys just put it out here for our listeners. Awesome. Thank you so much. And I think these all services are available for all the people in Manitoba, I guess.
Really anywhere beyond Manitoba. So you don't have to be a resident of Manitoba or have a Manitoba health card. You can be living anywhere in Manitoba and access us, like you mentioned. But also sometimes we have folks who might just be visiting Manitoba. Maybe they're here on vacation or they're visiting someone or here temporarily. They also can access us.
Awesome. That's nice, actually. Okay. So for the support and services, I also wanted to ask one more question on this. That since these all are services, when you're providing all the services to the different kind of people, so this question is basically from your part, that how does your team ensure that the services are accessible, inclusive to all the people out there, and trauma-informed?
Yeah, so one question I always ask people is, you know, what can I know about you that can help me with your care today? And I find that's a nice way to open up a conversation about asking those open-ended questions and being open to whatever that care might look like for somebody. Of course, everyone's going to come in with their own trauma, culture, all of these things they walk into a room with, and that might be helpful for them. We talk a lot about different resources that are in the community and what might be helpful for this person. And you know, we talk a lot about how community is helpful for healing, and what healing can look like isn't always reporting to police and isn't always getting a medical exam done, but it can be connecting with community. There's a lot of different ways, and we talk about that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and some of the other ways we're really trying to improve our accessibility and being inclusive is our organization, and particularly, you know, our managers, really trying to bring in a lot of education for our team on, you know, what is unconscious bias, what are our unconscious biases, doing some anti-racism training, and just having our team really understand the intersecting lenses of how people live and experience and how that intersects with violence. And in terms of the trauma-informed care piece, that's, you know, a hallmark of obviously of what we do. And the biggest thing with that is having people make the choice on what their care looks like and giving them choices. That's a huge part, is letting them be that driver of that. And then all of our staff too have a mandate to take our gender inclusivity training, and we have a trauma-informed care workshop as well.
Awesome, 100%. I think that really makes sense. And now, till now we have discussed about knowing the cause, the understanding, the awareness, and the support services that clinic or Hummingbird program has it. Now, I'd like to shift our conversation towards the community and student role. So while talking about the community and student role, I know we also have our family members or peers. So how can they be useful? Let's say, if I have to phrase this question, how can peers or members of the community support someone who may have experienced harm, or how they can act?
Yeah, I guess I kind of alluded to this before, but it's all about believing someone when they tell you. That first disclosure to their trauma can sometimes be the biggest one that people remember. Just looking at how people react to their trauma and, you know, believing them is one of the biggest things, and validating, you know, that this happened to them, and also empathizing and that kind of thing. If you ever want to, I would always recommend someone who's supporting somebody to also call the sexual assault crisis line. That can always be helpful, just to talk it through and get support yourself, and also ask how you can support that person. It can also lead to the resources like Hummingbird or like other ones in the city. So that's helpful too.
Awesome. I think that also covers my another question, that is there any recommended ways to respond if someone is seeking support or appropriate help from other people? I think you just mentioned about being listening to them carefully and maybe even directing them towards the crisis line.
And I think one of the things, too, is that when you're hearing someone's story, when you're hearing someone's been assaulted, not to assume what they should be doing with that, mm-hmm. with what's happened to them.
Yeah.
Sometimes people might say, oh, now you have to report to police, or now you have to do X, Y, or Z. And it's really important to hear what the person's telling you and validate whatever they want to do. So mm-hmm. if that's helping them to get to support, helping them to get to a resource, that's the best you can do. But trying not to, you know, put any of your beliefs onto that person is really helpful, because it's hard enough dealing with what's going on and the trauma associated with assault. So mm-hmm. just remembering that this is about them in this moment.
Absolutely. And on that part, because I know that university and there are so many campus on campus student clubs or communities here as well. So is there anything that the university or, let's say, student communities play or we can play in the future to create safer or more supportive environments for the situation?
I think, you know, just talking about stigma and conversation, when you're talking with peers and when you're having those conversations and you hear people maybe saying comments that are maybe stigmatized or, you know, like in, I guess, involved in rape culture and that sort of rhetoric, I think it's important to stand up for someone and just speak up and say, you know, that's not appropriate. These aren't the things that you should be doing. And just think about when you're saying these things or if this thing comes up for you. And if you've said anything like this that maybe you're now regretting, to just think about the perspective of someone who's been affected by violence and just understand, you know, understand where that's coming from.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, what our role is community members as well, is the whole bystander movement, to not be a bystander. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you see another friend or someone in your circle or community who is using harmful behavior or who's not getting consent, you know, it's our role to call that out. Just like Claire talked about with rape culture, if someone's perpetuating that, you know, it's our role to have that discussion, right? And to mm-hmm. not continue to perpetuate mm-hmm. that.
Awesome. And I think when you mention about that kind of culture, I think a lot of things even go just sidelined. Even those things just get sidelined by when people or the person who is being going through that is not aware of what he or she is going through. So on that part, I believe and I totally understand when you shared about creating awareness among people. And I think my another question will be related to that. Like, how can these kind of awareness or, let's say, initiatives from us help to reduce those kind of stigma or, let's say, encourage individuals to go out and maybe just talk to another person or maybe even go for the support line if they are comfortable with?
Yeah, I think there's a number of ways we can do that. So maybe it's, you know, part of that harm reduction approach. If there is events happening, you know, doing that education. So are there events, whether it be during Sexual Assault Awareness Month or Domestic Violence Awareness Month or others, or even, you know, when people are starting back to school, that talks about mm-hmm. consent culture and start having that conversation of, like, what does sexual assault look like? So not only, you know, where you can access help, but I think you can have events or have that conversation on campus and in different student groups of, you know, what does that look like, and having kind of that no tolerance, right? We don't have tolerance for that in our spaces, and how do we create safer spaces for all people?
Awesome. Do you want to share anything? Okay. Awesome then. Just to keep the time on the note that we have last 4 minutes, and I think it's kind of like time for that we start to wrap up our topic and the episode for today. So as we begin to wrap up, I want to bring this back to our listeners again, and do you want to share anything that you want to share that we did not discuss in today's episode, or that you guys want to share anything?
I think my biggest message would be, if someone has experienced violence, whether that be sexual violence or violence from a current or a past partner, or you're wondering if your experience constituted violence, I would encourage them to reach out to Clinic and to Hummingbird. And you don't have to know what you want even, but we can help you navigate that. So, and like Claire said before, sometimes we have so much focus on reporting or a kit, that doesn't have to be what your help is about. You get mm-hmm. to choose, you know, what your healing looks like. And so if that first step is giving us a call, you know, we have lots of people there will help walk alongside you with that.
Awesome. Do you want to share anything, your last final message?
Yeah, I think, you know, like Ashley was just saying, it's all about your choice and it's all about what you want to do. Just recognizing yourself when you're maybe, you know, feeling things that are different from you after an assault. Maybe if that's some sort of trauma, you can come in and talk about what that looks like. Mm-hmm. It can be, you know, increase of anxiety, depression, you know, thoughts of suicide, triggers. Maybe your worldview has changed, right? Those kinds of things. To kind of recognize those as common signs of sexual assault trauma, and then to come in and talk about that if that's something that you want to do. But I think recognizing those signs is important just so that you can come in and get help when you need it.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much to both of you for sharing all of your thoughts. And my final question would be, again, like how we can connect to clinic or Hummingbird program. But absolutely, you guys already mentioned that. And I'm sure there is a website for clinic as well, I believe.
Yes, yeah, so you can go to www.clinic.mb.ca. And okay. Clinic is spelled with a K.
Awesome.
You can also find us on social media where a lot of our resources are also posted.
Yeah, I did. I did this morning.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so awesome. Again, thank you so much, Ashley and Claire, for making your time here today and for sharing such important insights with us and for celebrating the April month as well. And thank you so much for the work you do to all of your team. It truly makes a difference. And to everyone listening out there, support is available. And as we say, you are not alone. So if today's conversation brought up anything for you, we encourage you to reach out to available resources. As this is our final episode of the term, we want to take a moment to thank you all for listening and being part of these conversations with us. Thank you to the UMFM, Jared, Michael, for always providing a space for us as well. This podcast has always been about creating a space where students can feel supported, informed, and less alone. And we hope it has made a difference. This has been the Active Minds podcast on UMFM 101.5. I'm Neha signing out. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other, and Active Minds will see you soon again.
In need of a boost? IQ's Cafe and Billiards has you covered with your favorite Starbucks drink and food from some of Winnipeg's favorite spots, including O'Donuts? We've got everything you need to fuel your next cram session. Ready for a much-needed study break? IQ's has your back. We've got top-of-the-line diamond pool tables, board games, foosball, ping pong, and more. Open from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. Monday through Friday, and weekends from noon until 10 p.m. Come chill at IQ's Cafe and Billiards today.
Welcome to Turning Pages, a series of in-depth conversations with authors about their works.
All right. Well, we are joined in studio by Jill Heinerth, author of Into the Planets. Welcome.
Thank you.
So this is your memoir of your life in cave diving. I'm always curious about kind of like that point at which you're like, this is what I'm going to write this. Because, I mean, obviously you're still in the midst of your career.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've been wanting to write this book through my whole career. I mean, I've been keeping expedition journals as I've traveled to these crazy places, like from inside icebergs to underneath the Sahara Desert. And so I've been keeping notes my whole life. And I guess it's been an evolution to finally pull it together into a book. Yeah.
Was there like a specific sort of trigger point? Like did you do something where you're like, okay, now this is the point at which I'm going to kind of put this all in and compile all these notes?
Or? Yeah, no, it's been a slow progress. But when a literary agent reached out to me and said, "Oh my God, you know, I want to represent you," it was like, "Okay, I'll get this done."
Okay,
yeah.
So that kind of helped.
It does help
push it down the road.
Yeah.
So then, yeah. I mean, I won't call it episodic, but there's certainly like gaps in terms of the way that you tell the story. This is not like, you know, and then I did this, and then I did this, and then I did this.